unfortunately, Steve Cousins, our CEO, who was going to be the presenter, is off and away
at a conference in Europe and couldn't do it in the last minute. So you'll have to put up with me. And Henry Evans is here, fortunately, to help us as well. So this is our third year of hosting Dave's class, and it's always a pleasure. And what you guys are learning and what you're doing is really great. So we're glad to do it. And Willow Garage was established 5 years ago now in order to push the field of robotics out of the factory and out of cages. Robots and all the investment in robotics has either been in the military or it's been in industrial settings to build cars and the things you see in pictures. We want personal robotics to take off, and it's just a matter of when it will happen to where robots will be in everybody's life. And fortunately, I and some of the other people here who have gray hair have been were part of the personal computer revolution before there were computers in people's lives. They were only owned by big companies. That's sort of the way it is today. And so I hope that you remember this day as you progress through your career, and you'll remember that that Willow is actually committed. We have about 60 people, and we're committed to really getting robots to help in everyday life and everyday tasks. Something that's not obvious, there's not an obvious application that's going to be the application that gets everyone to use it. And so there's a lot of experimentation. There's a belief in open source and everything open. So all of our software here is put out as completely free open source, and anyone can use it. They can build a company around it and just build applications on top of all of the complex software necessary to run robots. So that means we support free open source libraries for computer vision, for 3D analysis, all the sensors that are going to have to be in the world that we take for granted in our bodies that that are electromechanical otherwise in the world. So we'll have a chance when after we've had a discussion and Henry's introduced one of our projects here to look around, and I can tell you more about the robots in particular and what we've done. But what we're really excited about this year is we've spent the last year, year and a half, working on a project we call Robots for Humanities. And Henry Evans has been our key collaborator in that, along with a group at Georgia Tech that has a lot of experience in exactly this area of how do we actually get robots to be in the world the way that people should be in the world and to do things that they otherwise would have difficulty doing. And Henry's been a terrific collaborator. So I'm going to turn it over to Henry, and he'll describe to you some of what's been going on and do some demonstrations. And we'll
this is going to be a loud speaker. It's going to be quite, roughly loud. So
don't get too close.
We'll be okay.
It's a where's the guy? Try it again. Nothing. Want the board?
I track a little bit down.
You're doing it the whole time.
Try it one more time. Well,
let me. I'll just say it. Henry works with an eye tracker, and we have one application which clearly just failed, even though we played with it for like an hour beforehand. So it's called Speakeasy, and he can type in whatever he wants, and then use text-to-speech to say it out loud. And we're using Stepstroke, which is a very nice text-to-speech engine. And then he can also type in sentences and assign them to buttons, to program buttons, which he can then recall. And all those get saved out in XML and recalled. So, and then he has sound effects. So that is a very simple tool, but it is very, very helpful. The way he types is just the regular Linux on-screen keyboard. He just, you know, looks at the buttons, and he clicks it, and that's how he works. And so what he was going to say is that he was looking around for a long time for some company that was technologically interested in particularly his condition. So he's, you know, quadriplegic, of course, and also mute. But he hears well, he thinks, obviously, he can click the mouse and obviously use his eyes. And what's nice is that he's very, very interested technologically and very quick. And so he's been an incredible guinea pig for us and has helped us out. And he apparently, he called a number of companies and asked whether they're interested in working with him and never got a call back. And then he saw on CNN a show on Little Garage, and he thought that might be a good match. And so he called or sent email just to the general email. They got a response back from Little Garage, and then went ahead and worked with him.
We can
try. Yeah, we can try the other demo. I mean, this was more for just
saying the words. Can you try the keyboard? The computer do it itself? Try doing something.
What?
All right, we can do one thing and restart it.
It's not speakers.
No.
Let me restart it.
Leave it, Henry, you say? To leave it? Andreas, he's saying put it back, he thinks it's working.
Oh, yeah. So that is the one. I mean, fortunately he's used to this. We sometimes have him the whole day.
It's not working?
And all he does is be patient and try things out. He had the robot. Tried shaving once, and it wasn't quite calibrated right. It started shaving his chest, but Henry just takes it all in, and that is extremely useful because obviously when you're not disabled yourself, it's extremely hard to imagine everything.
Switch it out, you say. Switch it out. Go ahead. Yeah.
You know, scratching
now.
Is an issue.
How about the mice? Leave this one on.
Think about it. And so one thing that the robot people did was get the robot to just, you know, help him scratch his face. I wasn't planning to do this, of course. So my name is Andreas Pepke. I'm mostly at Stanford, actually, in the CS department. But half-time, I work here because it's just a very, very interesting place, obviously. So what we're going to do is switch out to a different computer. What's that?
So yeah, let's just put it in, and then we can describe a little bit what we're doing.
Please do.
Can we show that?
Okay. Yeah.
We're having some networking problems as well. So we just did everything right before, like half an hour ago, and we thought, should we test or not? And then he said, we shouldn't test because everything just worked once, and we shouldn't waste that once, one time. And it worked once, it worked perfectly.
Yeah, it's Henry's fault, actually. I mean, he tried mine so many times before that it just, there was nothing left. Yeah, I can just,
Oh, but we're going to need to... No, wait a second. We'll need to start things before we put... Because now we cannot use the keyboard anymore.
Oh, yes. Oh, we're connected to the...
Yes, I will in a second.
So while you're doing that, I don't know if you have any questions. This is kind of not the way we were going to do it, but that's okay. Please.
Oh, wait. Is the robot plugged into Ethernet?
The robot itself was the result of about 2.5 years worth of design and development, both here and with people on the outside. And it's been incredibly durable. There are about 2 dozen of them around the world. And
so should we do my wireless again? Or let me ask a question.
They've been out in the world about 22 months now. And there have been failures.
So should we give wireless another try, or go with the cable?
Not very much. It's much more durable than any other recent platform we're aware of. So the robots are fine. What you're seeing here are various applications that we sort of build on demand. And
so if we unplug the robot, it should speak to us over Wi-Fi?
There's actually nothing that would prevent it from being a robot. It's a simple matter of programming, you might say.
An awful lot is a problem. Huh? All right, so something's working now. So
I'll just stick it in here, and then maybe I'll click the buttons so that we don't have to.
I know, it can connect it up. It won't take a long.
Now the app's working again, right?
Of course.
So I'm really sorry. We really didn't plan this ahead of time.
Yeah, but durability. Now, you know. Clearly, the software is always new, and to get it out in the wild, you would very much have to. But that's, again, that's really why Henry is so important to us. We don't have to have it bulletproof to try it out. We do a lot of iterative design. You'll try and say, well, no, that doesn't quite work, we'll change it, and so on. If you can find someone, I don't know whether you do projects in your class, but you know, if you have access to someone who is technologically interested and patient, that's just really excellent. I mean, I was up at. What's that? No.
It's just, I'm not sure what it does.
Testing it.
Oh, you were testing it. Oh.
You make him a nervous wreck.
He is making me a nervous wreck. It's like I was sitting here earlier, right? And so every once in a while, it was giving me like this eye signal. So, you know, I said, it's not working. But it actually was working. Yeah, go ahead if
good afternoon. My name is Henry Evans. And Steve asked me to tell you the history of robots for humanity, and to demonstrate some of what we have been doing. After that, we will all do Q&A. Please hold all questions until then, since I have to type out the answers. Okay then, let's start with the history of robots for humanity. A little more than a year ago, I was lying in bed, watching CNN as usual, when I suddenly saw Ali Velshi interviewing Charlie Kemp from Georgia Tech, who was manipulating what looked like a wonderful robot. Almost immediately, I imagined using it as a surrogate for my own severely paralyzed body. I memorized the name, Willow Garage, and I Googled it as soon as Jane put me on the computer. I was pleasantly surprised to learn it was in Menlo Park, which is very near my house. I wrote an email to the general email at Willow, explaining my situation, how I had been very impressed with PR2 on CNN, and how I was starting an effort called Robots for Humanity to explore ways to use technology to help the disabled. I had been sending out emails like this for months to various organizations, and usually got no response. To my surprise, however, Willow answered right away, and actually expressed interest. After exchanging a few ideas, I visited Willow Garage, and they actually cobbled together a program that allowed me to control PR2 right then and there. Along the way, they introduced me to Charlie Kemp of Georgia Tech, who had been working with robots and disabled people for years. To make a long story short, we decided to meet every quarter, and the program that has become known as Robots for Humanity was off and running.
Henry typed all that in himself, you know, he could have programmed the buttons himself and then used different button sets for that. So, I don't know whether you saw, take a look at this. So, this board has like a telephone, letters of, you know, groups of three letters, and the two of them have worked this out, so when he looks at one group of letters, you know, she kind of guesses which one it might be. And then, just like there are some telephone predictive texts, and she does that in her head. They do it extremely fast. And what's even better is they've done it so often that all she actually has to do is she does like this and said, this is A. And then they just do it in the air. It's just amazing. And if one of you is a computer science person, I'm looking actually for someone who would program an interface for Henry that takes advantage of the speed of doing that, so he doesn't have to hunt and peck as much, and just hit like these, look at these three-letter combinations, and then, you know, there's a lot of statistics you could do, of course. So, if you hear of someone, or, you know, if somebody here is interested, please let me know. I'm in the computer science department in the Gates, fourth floor. All right, leave for that. Okay. So, do you want to switch out? But actually, yes, if there are some questions that you still want to ask, you can ask Henry. He just has to sort of type in the answers. You want to go for it?
To make a long story short, we decided to meet every quarter, and the program that has become known as Robots.
Yeah, any questions? You'll have more opportunities. All right, why don't we start switching out?
Okay.
So the idea now is that Henry's going to demonstrate how he can control the robot to do various tasks
by projecting what he wants to do through the robot to act in the world. So, as you heard from Andreas, and I think we have a video up on the web of Henry shaving himself and scratching his nose. So if you just Google Robot for Humanities at Willow Garage, you'll see that video of him doing that. Today he's going to do some other things, just because you can already see that on video, so of course he wanted to do something different. Henry was a CFO of a startup here in the Valley. before he had this tragic stroke, which left him a quadriplegic. So he's incredibly bright and energetic at wanting to do these things and has really been pushing us, which is great. So your question, yes?
Just some background about the PR2 itself. What was it designed to do?
Great, great. So the question was some background on the PR2 robot while we're getting ready. So if you look at how robotics has been, as I said briefly, Willa Garage really wanted to spur the creation of a whole industry around and the whole creation of personal robots. And there were a couple of major problems. One of them was that there was all the software that's necessary to run a robot involves so many different engineering and scientific disciplines that it's really difficult for there even to be a few groups in the world that had to reach some critical mass of collaboration to do anything. And we wanted to increase that community much larger, and that's the reason for the software. And then the second part on the hardware side was that the hardware is very expensive, and graduate students, basically, when they would start their studies, or even undergraduates, they would take motors, they would cobble them together, they would write some kind of software, they would take a video and write a research paper, and no one else in the world could reproduce it because they used different motors, and oh, by the way, everything got taken apart. Nobody shared the code. And so the goal of the personal robot platform was to create a platform for research and development that used the open source software and allowed any group that was doing any part of robotics to be able to expand the capabilities in that one area. So the laser that you see tilting, it's a two-dimensional laser, and it has it scans vertically in order to give a 3D map. And so as soon as this gets going, they'll explain that to you. And so there are now a couple of dozen, as I said, of these in the world, and something like 30% of the papers at robotics conferences now refer to PR2-based research one way or another, and it's led to collaborations as well as reproducing scientific results. That's the way science and technology advances. You know, someone makes a claim and someone else believes it or doesn't and goes and tests it. And in robotics, that was almost impossible before because no one had a common platform. So we produce this platform and sell it at cost to anybody that can get a grant. There's a program that the NSF started called the National Robotics Initiative that just is going to grant money that was put around putting more PR2s out in the U.S., and hopefully that will happen soon. So, ready to go?
So we're pretty much ready to go. Let me just give you a little bit of context about what we're doing here. My name is Matej Okrilie. I'm a research scientist at Willow Garage. This is my colleague, Taijian Chow. And we both do grasping and manipulation research at Willow. And for a long time, we worked on autonomous capabilities for robots. And you can make some progress. You can make the robots do interesting things. But one thing is that it's very, very hard for robots to behave well in unstructured environments, in somebody's home, for example. There's just so much complexity, so much diversity that common sense to behave well in those situations is just something that's extremely difficult. Okay. On the other hand, the robot as a tool for Henry to do things, that is a problem that we believe is feasible because the robot has motor capabilities, it can move around, it's lacking cognitive skills, but Henry can provide those as he's controlling the robot. So we started working on this interface that allows Henry to command the robot to do various manipulation tasks in the environment. Our colleagues at Georgia Tech work on the problem of the robot making contact with Henry's body. At Willow, we work more on the robot commanded by Henry manipulating objects in the environment. And we built this interface that you're seeing here that Henry uses to control the robot. And now we have this very interesting problem. Even when you have somebody like Henry controlling a robot, you still don't want the operator to have to be in charge of every single detail, because that's just not efficient. It's cumbersome for the operator. You'd still like to take advantage of anything that the robot can do autonomously to make it easier, to make input easier, to make the tasks more efficient. So our work in this project means combining autonomy with input devices for Henry, putting those together and making the robot do things. And this interface that Henry's going to demonstrate, this is what he uses to both get feedback from the robot and send commands to the robot. In the lower left is a camera image from the robot's sensors, from the Kinect. And the rest of the screen is a three-dimensional rendering based on sensor data. The camera image is great because it's a camera image and we're very good at understanding it. The 3D rendering is great because you can change the virtual camera and look at it from any angle, right? With a camera, you cannot look at a scene from the side. And since you have no depth perception, it's very hard to manipulate objects in 3D. The combination of the two, we think, enables lots and lots of things. And this is what we're going to show today. And originally, what Henry wanted to do is to demonstrate the interface was pick a handkerchief out of Dave's pocket and drive around. But we didn't want to subject Dave to the risk, so I volunteered. So I'm going to go sit in the back. Oh, and one thing to mention, the one difficulty that we're having here, it might sound strange, is Wi-Fi. So for some reason, the Wi-Fi network gave up on us just 30 minutes ago, so the robot is plugged in to Ethernet. We'll have to tend the cable at the same time that we're doing all this. Please ignore the cable. Normally, we do this over Wi-Fi. So, yeah, let's get going.
Using the manual base arrows, we have a number of different interfaces, which includes autonomous navigation and such. But you know, with the cable being so iffy as it is, we don't want the robot to start spinning around in circles or anything. So he's just driving forward a bit at a time using arrows. Oh, yes. That green splotch. Don't hit that green splotch. That's a dog.
Or look down and you'll see it again. Or dog is smarter than our robot. It used to be you going in. Let's try a direct move.
Well, that only goes half a meter at a time. We've been
through. Oh, yeah.
It has to be navigation.
Let's try navigation.
Yeah, Henry, do you want to try just one navigate? Just to see. You can always cancel it. Oh, don't use that one. No, no, no. Go back to interact. You'll have to right-click on base. Sorry.
So, many parts of the robot in the 3D interface we've turned into interaction tools. So, for example, now Henry clicked on one of them and said that he wants to navigate. So a ghostly robot appears in the interface that Henry can drag to whatever destination he wants.
And you can see it's appearing in the camera image on the left too, so you can see kind of where it is.
And it's turned around, so...
Which is okay, you can turn around manually. So he didn't ask to go very far, but it is autonomous navigating, and it's avoiding that guy's feet. Oh, turn the other way. No, Henry, the other way. Yes. Gotta watch cable.
It's a cable problem. Leash entanglement.
Yes. It really was working just like half an hour ago on Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Yeah, untuck before you move in close. Don't forget to take a new snapshot. So we have all these buttons for our little helper functions. So now he's going to ask the robot to untuck its arms. The robot needs its arms tucked in like that for navigating because it's within the footprint of its base, so it knows not to hit anything with them.
Thank you. Henry's doing is he's taking a three-dimensional snapshot of the scene with the Kinect, and you'll see that here in a second. He's clicking the head of the robot and saying, take a snapshot. And then you'll get a three-dimensional point cloud of the scene, including... Okay. So that now, if you place on a point in the scene, the robot has three-dimensional information for that point and can send the grip or to do something.
So now he's broadcasting click position, which means please jump the control for the gripper over to the spot so he doesn't have to drag it all the way over there. And it's red to show that the robot can't actually reach that pose or something's in collision right now. So he needs to adjust it until the robot thinks it's a feasible grasp.
For what's still a very difficult problem. Picking a handkerchief out of somebody's pocket is not something that any autonomous robot is going to have a routine for. It's not something that programmers have necessarily thought about. But if a robot's going to be useful for Henry, the robot needs to be able to do whatever Henry dreams of doing, right? So we need our tools to be general enough so that Henry can use them to do whatever, but on the other hand, we cannot afford everything to be painfully difficult and slow. Because now the problem is Henry needs to tell the robot what to grasp in the environment. So it needs to tell it where the gripper should go. And that's three-dimensional information. Actually, it's six-dimensional if you're seeing that the gripper has both position and orientation. Whereas Henry only has a computer screen and a mouse to provide information. So we're trying to make it such that it's as easy as possible to provide that kind of information to the robot. And then Henry now only has to tell the robot where the gripper should go. The robot is going to try to compute a path to get the arm there without hitting anything in the environment. So you can see that the virtual gripper that Henry's manipulating has turned green. That means the robot's saying, yeah, that's a pose that I can get to. So now Henry just says accept. The robot then does motion planning for the arm to get the gripper to that location and goes ahead and executes the grasp.
All right. There you go. All right. That's really good.
Okay, now that I'm off my handkerchief holding duties, I can be on Ethernet cable. Let's do a navigation goal. If you look, if you make the robot look at you, just look left, and then drag the navigation goal all the way. Oh, yes, great idea. Type the arms. So to send the robot somewhere to navigate, Henry could use just the arrows on the base. Just move a little bit at a time, move a little bit, move a little bit. That works, but it's slow. And Henry would have to be in charge of avoiding obstacles. With the tool that he's going to try now, what he does is he looks in the world at where he'd like the robot to go, and then he just sends a navigation goal. He tells the robot, navigate to, then drags this virtual robot that appears towards the goal. That should do it. Excellent. Okay, so now using, you can see that he can manipulate that ghostly robot in both images. He sends the robot to where he thinks the robot should go. He can do fine adjustments of the pose. And then eventually when he's happy, he just says accept. And the robot's autonomous navigation and collision avoidance take over and do something. Lots and lots of things, to open cabinets, open drawers, move objects, pick them up, put them down. But it's essentially this little task kind of, you know, allowed us to give you a general idea of how the system works.
So, if you have any questions about that, what you just saw, we can do that maybe while we're walking around. Because we're running, we only have about 10 more minutes, so I was going to take you around to some of the world drive and where the robot characters may. They're here in Palo Alto, and there's a group at Brown University, and they're working on how to control the PRQs remotely, and they both have PRQs that they work on. So a lot of collaboration goes on in sharing of code where they have different complementary skills. So it's really sort of helping things. So what you'll see as we go around is there's a lot of robots actually occupy more space here than people. There are about 60 people here, and trying to get the cost of these things down. You'll see a little robot, if you go around, you'll see one in the corner over there. This is sort of the high-end robot. At most university, it retails for $400,000. Most of them are sold at $280,000. But just to give you an idea, if you buy just one arm from a company that makes human-safe arms, they're around $125,000 an arm. So it's actually, and it's all integrated, it all works. So we make a little platform for people who to do applications on Android, and we've worked with Google so that you can actually control the robot operating system ROS through an Android interface. And if we had more time and I could grab a PR2, we actually have apps that run on an Android tablet that you can just directly control over Wi-Fi, and you connect to the Wi-Fi router inside the robot. You don't have to go through the building, so that works better when you're nearby. I'm going to take you in the room, which is our lab where most of the PR2s are and where everybody sort of works in a big area and does programming on the PR2 of various kinds. Yes?
Can you get one that's quite cool?
We do. Go online. Go online and you'll see Cool Flight. That was actually a week-long exercise. We had things we call code sprints. And so play pool, and we also had to deliver a beer. Actually, beer delivery is more popular online than Cool Flight. So I don't know. I think it's every geek's dream to have a robot bring
the beer. And in this case, you know, everyone had to make it a little bit more interesting. So people would order a particular brand, and it would have to do recognition of the label in order to bring the correct beer to the person.
You know, there's always people in Hollywood who are one step ahead or 10 steps ahead. So really, people in Hollywood could be coming up with the creativity of what could be done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good point. That's a really good point, yeah.
So let's go in here, and I'll just show you some of that. This is just where lots of experiments take place. There's grasping and difficult problems of clutter and enclosed spaces. You'll see lots of household objects. It looks like a mess. It probably is, but most of them are in order to learn how to grasp and manipulate regular household objects. So, and also not to hurt things. So, for example, in the middle of everything, we put a vase that's actually not ceramic. It's plastic, but it's to make sure that if a robot hits something, it doesn't break it. So, so there's various experiments that go here. Let's go up here just to show you. So one of the things that's going on here now is what it's really difficult to do things autonomously. And so this is a challenge called a Yesterday Sushi that Steve came up with, and that is a challenge to everyone in the robotics research community. And there's an international conference going to happen this year in May. And the task that people are challenged to do is, how do I set this table, including chopsticks, to make it nice and hard, get rid of dirty dishes, or make believe they're dirty, get rid of all those, put them in the dishwasher, which is behind you, go into those shelves and get clean dishes, set the table, and then go, to make it really hard, behind you is a little rotating sushi table, and go get, there won't be sushi on it, but go get a plate, which is really difficult for a robot to actually get something that's moving. So there are various groups around the world that are trying to actually do this task, and there'll be a bake-off, if you will, of the different software code. And we're doing it both autonomously and with the interface you saw there, where a person actually drives the robot to do it. And as awkward as that interface is, the fact is a person driving remotely through the cameras of the robot eyes did it the first time in about 45 minutes. Now, it takes a person to do what I described about 3 minutes. So that shows you how difficult the technologies are these days. But a robot can't do it autonomously at all at this point in time. And so how far can we get autonomously? And how does that compare to a human in the loop, as we call it, right? So that's what you saw demonstrated, which is a focus here, which is saying that robots aren't going to be these things you see in the movies that sort of have their own mind, like, you know, do the fights. What was it, Blue Steel? Or there was this thing of... that where the robots were fighting this year. It was a popular movie. We all went as a group and went and saw it on opening day. But you saw that Henry can actually just drag a remote object that looks like a robot, and then it autonomously will go there. So you don't have to do everything yourself. And the robots are very good at avoiding obstacles, sometimes better than people, because they're always looking everywhere. But they're very awkward at being able to pick things up. So just to give you a sense of what the research is like and what the difficulties are, someone like Henry, he's really good at that interface, by the way. It's very difficult. When I just use my mouse on a screen, it's really hard because you're looking at 3D space and moving in a 2D plane, and it's really complicated. So it really has allowed him to sort of move his intentionality into the world with a machine, and that's just, you'll see if you look at the video online, there's a video of him the first time he was able to scratch his nose, and honestly, it was a touching moment. I mean, he was first time in 10 years he could scratch his nose when he wanted to without asking his wife. So it's really been a great project.
Doing things independently.
Doing things independently, yeah. Right. Yeah, it's the best way to say it. Yeah. So any questions?
What's the purpose of the cameras on the frame?
Oh, so this is all to localize things. Actually, I don't think this is actually being used for the sushi challenge. But in general, this is like an area. Having a 3D map of the world is just critical for obstacle avoidance and also knowing where everything is. And I think these are actually sonar. So they actually build a map. So part of it is just to have an experimental space that's very well mapped out in 3D space. So they're not being used right now. The thing that also, by the way, has transformed robotics, and you see it in almost every design course, is the Microsoft Xbox, when it came out with the Kinect for, you know, the motion detector. That
that Kinect does what $25,000 worth of sensors in that head can do, probably in some ways better, because it's really optimized for human scale tasks, and it's also at a distance that's kind of human scale, right, for people to play games and do gestures. So we actually now have them everywhere, and they're only $150 instead of $25,000. So we actually sometimes mount them on the sides, and you'll see them in multiple places in various robot systems that people are using. Yeah.
Do you think, everywhere I've seen the Kinect being used, it's exactly that same platform taken straight out of the box from Xbox
yes.
and Microsoft being used. Do you not think there's a good way to do that for an even cheaper price if it's not through the Microsoft label or through the...
Yeah, that's a really good question. So first of all, Microsoft spent tens of millions of dollars to make it so that the data rates coming out... It turns out you can't get to the raw data. So now there are other companies that are making that. Asus has come out with a model that is about the same price and you can get to the raw data. And it is cheaper. Microsoft has special chips in there that already do things like the skeleton tracking. Is already computed online. So it turns out the PR2, I mean, I didn't go into any technical details, but 90% of the battery power is just to run the servers on board that are computing all the things you saw. Nothing is done off board because the data rates to handle all that imaginal information and all that motor data, all of that is, everything's in a closed loop, for those of you who know engineering. And so all the different sensor data that's going on all has to be done today on the robot. And so the amount of computation is astounding to do all of that. And Microsoft has sort of optimized that. Just plugging the output of the Kinect into a USB 2 port will saturate the USB in any laptop because there's so much data coming out. And that's after they've actually turned down the resolution and they've done all kinds of pre-computing. So it's a really big problem. And the camera is really bad. It's VGA. It's 640 by 480. So... there's a lot of challenges in how to deal with all the data.
For comparison, what's the human eye?
Oh, that's a good question.
You can't judge it the same way.
I understand.
That's a really good question. What's interesting is that actually how much resolution do you need is more like the question we ask. You know, what can you get away with? And if the resolution is not very good in those point clouds, like you saw all those green things on the screen you were seeing, is where it's building a map and only keeping the data of where there'll be points of collision. And those were those green areas. So it's avoiding everything that's in green. Now, in order to do that, it actually had to go and look at all the data in the world and then identify, you know, what was clear, you know, find the plane. Everything is about plane finding. Where's the wall? Where's the floor? Where are the walls? Where's the table? That sort of thing. And then it throws all that away, and then it saw the dog image and kept that. So we sort of look at it the other way around, like how little data can you get away with and still do the perception task that's necessary. And that's what most people do. So, but I'm sure that we'll see more. The key technology comes from an Israeli company called PrimeSense that licenses it and to Microsoft and Asus. And they sell it in much more expensive form than Microsoft, it turns out. That the development kit with just the PrimeSense stuff, I forget how much it is, but it's more like $1,000 instead of $150. Yeah. So you're getting the advantage of having it sold at tens of millions. So let's go back this way, and then I'll just show you a few things. And I think we're about 5:30. So
great.
We usually, I think I told you, we have about 60 people here, 10 to 20 interns. So you'll see Kinects everywhere. Every one of these has a Kinect on the head. And one of the reasons it's mounted there is because the Kinect is blind; it doesn't actually pick up anything too close or too far away. It's really totally optimized. So let's go through this one. So I'll just quickly show you, this is where they're assembled. Almost all the parts are made by contractors, by different shops here and overseas. And these are PR2s in various states. You can see this one is fully
armed.
Fully armed, right? It's at 6 feet.
Oh, I see.
see one of the arms here. This is an arm that was in testing. So you can see there are about, turns out there are 31 motors. These are Swiss motors that have encoders in them. Every one of these has to have a special power driver board. In most industrial robots, all the power is, and all the control is off of the robot because the arm doesn't move around. Here, so that it's modular, every motor has its board very close to it, so everything can be modularized. If you were to look like over there, there are two networks in the robot. One is an Ethernet, running a gigabit network for the data, and another one called EtherCAT, which uses the same kind of protocol, but it's optimized for real time, and all the data from the encoders and the motors go through the EtherCAT network. And then you'll see just regular stuff like that knit gear box is something you buy yourself in order to have a hub at home. Same thing for the Wi-Fi. So we try to use as many parts as we can, but then we have to build them ourselves. This is the torso with a spring compensation that are being assembled. So we assemble 4 to 6 of them at a time, and we can usually build about 1 a week is what we build. So just to give you an idea of what it takes to make one of these, you can feel this one is better compensated than the one out there. So you'll see that it actually seems to have no weight. It sort of floats wherever it is. And of course, it's not powered. And if we took one of the powered arms, you can actually, if you were to hit it, it's not like a rigid robot arm like you would see in a factory, but it actually, the motors can be driven backwards so that it'll comply and it'll move. Rather than knocking your head off, the arm will go back. At least that's the theory. We haven't tested that. And there's just a lot of, we prototype a lot of things here. This is a laser cutter that we went and studied what kind of laser cutters you guys used at Stanford and bought one like that. 3D printers, that sort of stuff. Well, this is basically where we test the robots before they're shipped. So, for example, that one there, we were having some noise problems in one of the labs for 2 years. So that spine is moving up and down. And the reason it's got all those heavy weights on it is to simulate the arm, the way the arms in the head, so that it's actually loaded properly. So that's just simply the base. And when you go by, you can see the casters that Dave was talking about. On the bottom, you can see the wheels. They're both rotated as well. Each wheel has two motors. And that's about all we have time for, I think. It was worth having Henry as part of the tour. That was
a new
thing we did this year. So
okay,
we get a sense of how this all works in a setting.
I'm glad it finally worked.
Yeah.
So are there going to be internship opportunities this summer?
They're posted now. Okay. So look at our jobs page. There's summer interns that are posted for various kinds of internships.
Could you talk a little bit about TechSci?
No, I didn't. So,
could you?
Yeah, sure.
As one final thing.
Sure. So one of the things that people often ask, well, how do we make money? Since I keep saying about we're giving all the software away and we're selling everything at cost. We actually weren't even going to sell it, but people wanted them, and so we sell it at cost. But the idea is that Willow Garage is about creating this industry and then spinning companies off in the good tradition of Silicon Valley. And we've spun one company off already, and there'll be 2 to 3 more happening in the next few weeks that you'll hear about, or months. Everything takes longer than you expect. This is one where one of our engineers actually lives in
Indianapolis?
Indiana, yeah. Near Indianapolis. I'm trying to remember the town. But anyway, in the middle of it, because his whole family's there, and he didn't want to move here. And he came for the weekend and decided to take spare parts off of the PR2 that were part of the Alpha over there, and put together the ability to run Skype, but to be able to control
the screen and the whole Skype experience so that he didn't have to wait for someone to open up a window, that he could actually just log in this case, to this Skype screen. We call it Skype on a stick. and log in. So it's got a computer running the same robot operating system. And in, literally in a weekend, he was able to put together a system to be able to do that. It's in a charging station now. And so we use it for remote telepresence, it's called, where he will, and most of us here, when I first started, met him through this
yep.
device. I mean, quite literally.
In the hall. Will,
he's now part of the startup, and they've moved to Mountain View, which is where the company is. It's a company called Suitable Tech, Suitable Technologies, that's productizing that. And there are a couple of Bay Area companies that are, a couple of companies in the U.S. that have already entered the market.
I don't
think that they've got a better one, but it really is used, and it's a completely different experience with a screen that's almost human size, and with him having the ability to come to the table at lunchtime. He can't eat with us, but it's 2 hours
yeah.
later where he is anyway.
Right.
But he'll actually have conversations like you would, like you would if he was here, and it really is it transformed things for him and for us. And the biggest surprise when he finally came and visited. He's tall. He's like 6 feet tall. How funny is that? And this was actually used, I think, because you were talking about TV.
The episode of Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, the Big Bang Theory. There's an episode of Big Bang Theory that actually was used. They actually used that episode for something on the Emmys. You know, when it was up for an Emmy and they show a little clip. They actually used him and the robot. This was when the nerd in Big Bang Theory decided he could live longer if he didn't ever have to get out of bed. So he was in bed, and he would drive around the world in the tech side. They even had it in a car.
In a car, right.
Right. And they put, he always wears a t-shirt. They hung a t-shirt. And he'd have different t-shirts in different scenes. But so that was just something we did because it was fun. So that's just an example of how we hope to make money one day. Not here, because this is more like the R&D center. So, thanks for coming. And if you have any other questions, just email me through Dave or however you want to know about it. So.
Bob, I want to thank you a lot for having us here. It's
and
been a great experience.
Sorry for all the glitches.
Now this is the way things are.
It really all worked before you came.
Yeah. Heard that before.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks again.
Appreciate it. Okay. Thank you.
Take care. Anybody need to sign in on the list here? I think you have to sign out as well on this list. So
I'll sign everybody out.
Okay, thanks.
I'll just take care of that.
Okay.
I'll take your list.
All right. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thanks, Dave. Yeah, my pleasure. Good luck, guys.
Oops.
Yeah, so it always runs a little late.
No, that's fine.